Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yeah. And we do this, of course, for the greater good.
For the greater good.
We're going to talk about Hot Fuzz from 2007, a movie directed by Edgar Wright.
Yay!
Starring Simon Pegg.
Yay!
And I think it was written by the both of them.
I think so.
Yeah, so... But yeah, this is episode, I'm sorry, the second movie in the Cornetto trilogy.
Yes.
And we talked about Shaun of the Dead, which is the first one, back in episode 20.
Oh my word.
I know. That was like 12 years ago.
It seems like it.
It was there a long
was
time ago.
Episode 20? My goodness.
Yeah, yeah.
Back in the midst of time.
We started at number one. I looked it up. It's all true.
Oh, Lord.
So, but yeah, these are so fun. We both are big Simon Pegg, Edgar Wright, Nick Frost. Yeah, I mean, this is good stuff. But I still have yet to watch all of Spaced. I watched some of it. But Spaced is something that I must finish.
I love it so much. And that's a two-season TV show, British, of course, that Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg did. And Nick Frost was in it. And some other people who you'll see rotating through these movies also. Of course, that's often the way with British actors. They have a smaller pool of, you know, hey, it's that guy, familiar actors they work with. But they were very much, I would say, the precursors to Shaun of the Dead, using pop culture and everything, but still remaining funny to a more general audience.
Yeah, and I like their philosophy. I saw an interview or something, and they said that they would much rather have a very small number of people go, oh, that's wonderful, and just be delighted, than to have a huge number of people just go, eh.
Yeah.
You know, so they kind of focused, especially on Spaced, he said, is kind of a really narrow audience.
Yeah, I think so. Hannah really likes it. Rose does not, that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
You know,
and
it's like, really? How could you not like this? But, yeah. And this one is interesting because to me, it is like Galaxy Quest in that it parodies buddy movies, cop movie, thriller movie, that genre. But it also elevates it because it's such a loving homage that they take it seriously at the basic level.
Yeah.
You know, so you get the satisfaction out of it that you get out of those other movies like, oh, I don't know, Bad Boys 2. And then, though, it's hilarious.
Yeah, it's great, and that's really what it is. Just like what you said, it's a buddy movie, it's an action movie, completely packed with cliches.
Oh yeah,
that are purposely put in there as homage. And it just works. It's just fun. It's a fun, fun movie.
Oh, yeah. In fact, one of their sources, when I was glancing through information, was they pulled out Roger Ebert's little book of movie cliches to be sure they had all of them.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't even know such a thing existed.
Me either, but it made me want to get it.
We must find it.
Yes.
Yeah. That's too good. That's too good. Yeah, they were talking about like a cliche being, you know, how there's always in a public PA system, there always has to be feedback.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
For some reason. And you know what's funny is we're doing a play at the Playhouse, and just last week we had to record some dialogue that's going to be played as if it was over a PA system. And I said, just naturally, you know, there ought to be a little feedback at the beginning of that to make it so everyone knows it's on a PA system. And it's just, it's so ingrained. It's like, that's where that came from. It's all, in the movies that way. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it just made me laugh because I came across the same bit of information and I just laughed out loud because, man, is it in there? It's deep in my head. Yeah.
Well, and they, let me think. Nicholas Angel, mm-hmm. that's Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
He's like the super efficient policeman.
Nicholas Angel, right.
Yeah.
And he's in London.
London. And he is so efficient that he's making everybody else look bad. So they give him a promotion so that they can transfer him to a tiny village. And he's very upset because, you know, he's not going to have any opportunity to do his job there properly. Nothing ever happens in little villages. And once he gets to the little village, of course, everything is askew somewhat. Nothing's being run right. There are all these mysterious people. It just doesn't add up and make sense. So what I was going to say, the only reason I went into that is that once he gets to that village, it's got all those cliches. Mm. It's almost like reading an Agatha Christie mystery in some ways.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, the little coziness of all the people knowing each other, the tiny little shops, the eccentrics. And so they not only pulled from the buddy action thriller movies, they were also pulling from those kind of sources of cozy mysteries and cult movies from the 70s. There's one point where I was like, when I first saw it, I went, oh my gosh, I remember the rash of this kind of movie, you know, from when I was in high school. So anyway.
That's neat. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is. Yeah. They mentioned Murder in the Orient Express mm-hmm. or on the Orient Express.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It makes me want to watch some of those old movies again.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the old James Bond stuff too.
But
yeah, it's great. It's just fun. It's just fun. So yeah, this is a different role for Peg too. It's like he doesn't smile in this for a long time because he's just so serious. As Nicholas Angel is just a very serious cop, you know, he's by the numbers, and so he's often the straight man, you know, that things are kind of bouncing off of. And he, you know, he doesn't even realize it. You know, you realize fairly quickly that he can't see his own behavior.
Right.
He's seeing everyone else's behavior and trying to keep everybody in line and on, you know, on point. But he's not realizing that he's got his own flaws. And I think the scene in which that's immediately illustrated is after he's told that he's going to be transferred to a village, again, against his will. He has no, they're getting him out of there because he's making him look bad.
Mm-hmm.
He's making all of his fellow employees look bad because he's so efficient. So they're like, well, let's ship him off to somewhere else. And then everyone else will look normal, right?
They don't want to step up their performance.
Exactly.
They'll just get rid of him.
Right. They just get rid of him. So, their numbers look right.
Right.
And, so he goes to visit his girlfriend who is like a medical examiner or something, or a crime scene investigator, but we never see her face. She's just in a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking to her about, well, I've got to move now. And they're actually breaking up right here during a crime scene investigation,
mm-hmm.
which was hilarious. and it's full of people with wearing masks going through the crime scene. And Nicholas is standing there talking to her. And an interesting thing there is that was Kate Blanchett, who was the girl. And she never removes her mask, so you never know that it's her. I never knew it was her.
No, and me then, either. It's just her eyes.
Yeah. And they said that she came down for one day, did that, and she donated her fee to charity. And she's not credited at all for
it. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they said she was great. It was fun.
Well, and what gives you the cue in that of his behavior is that the whole time they're having this talk where I got the sense they'd already broken up, but he was kind of using this as a chance to kind of reconnect with her a little bit before he left.
Okay.
But anyway, he's mentioning things about things people are either doing wrong, or you do see that window's broken from the inside. And so he can't turn it off ever. And they do say that. Do you ever switch off?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's always on the job, and that's part of his problem. He's never relating to anybody in a personal way.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And, yeah, throughout that whole scene, you know, he's completely serious and stuff. I mean, they're talking about very heavy things. You know, this is my boyfriend, you know, she says. Not him. I'd never go out with him. That other guy.
And he talks to someone because they're all in masks and fully suited. So you can't see who anyone is. It's like a hazmat team sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. That was a good scene. That was a good scene.
Well, also, it's a different role for him because up to that point, all I'd seen him in was Spaced and Shaun of the Dead, and he's always been a slacker in those. In these, he is completely opposite, super efficient, as we've said, very competent, very driven and motivated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't find out till later why, but it doesn't even matter. That's his whole life.
Right. And when did Shaun of the Dead come out? I'm looking that up right now. 2004. So it was 3 years before that. And they had no idea when they made Shaun of the Dead, they had no idea if it was going to be anything. And then so when they were making Hot Fuzz, you know, it's like, okay, well, we've kind of made it here, right? People are going to want to see this movie. And then, of course, when they did World's End, they had both Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg, had reached some heights, some extreme popularity. So I sure hope we see more from them, but I don't know if we will.
Together, you mean?
Yes, together.
Right. Yeah, right. I know, because I was watching this movie again and just looking at the way the cuts were done and the transitions and how fast things happen and how imaginatively it's shown. And I just thought, I love Edgar Wright's style.
No, me too.
So much.
How did you like the paperwork montage?
Yes.
And I mean, yeah, they're, you know, again, playing with cliches, you know, you're taking the worst part about being a cop, the most boring aspect, and they make an action sequence out of it, you know, a montage, you know, that you usually like a training thing or, you know, what else do they do in action movies with montages? It's usually some kind of training that they do that makes them awesome.
And this is how well he's got two pens and he clicks them and starts filling things out. And they said that came from them talking to actual cops who were complaining about how much paperwork they had to do. So they needed to incorporate that somehow.
I like that. That's great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny stuff. But I love, you know, when you see Edgar Wright's stuff, I mean, he's always got those things. You know, Scott Pilgrim was like that. Even, I don't know if you saw Ant-Man. Ant-Man had that little history where Edgar Wright wrote a script, and then they decided not to do Edgar Wright's script, and then they rewrote it, and then they filmed it. Because Edgar Wright was going to direct Ant-Man, but pulled out. And I guess it was amiable. I don't know. But you could see Edgar Wright-ish things in Ant-Man.
Oh.
I felt. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, that looks like Edgar Wright right there.
Okay.
He's just one of those directors that I feel like, you know, I kind of know that. You know, when I see an Edgar Wright film, I feel like I know.
He has a distinctive visual style and sensibility, and you notice it if you like his stuff.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I do. I like pretty much everything he's done. I don't know that I think I've seen all of it.
He hasn't done tons of movies.
No.
I don't think.
Yeah. So, but cool.
Go ahead.
No. It's interesting to me, you know, the actors that they put in this thing too. Another one of those cliches that you see all the time is you can tell who the villain is often by who's playing it. And, you know, it's like, okay, well, here's Michael Caine and then a bunch of actors we don't know. So it's like, okay, well, Michael Caine is clearly the villain in this piece. But they tried to hire, and they did. I mean, there was a whole bunch of famous British actors in this. It's amazing, really, when you look at it, who they got to be in this movie. So it's almost as if they hired a whole bunch of equals, right? So you couldn't figure that out by who is in it.
I didn't even look at the cast list in terms of famous actors. I mean, Timothy Dalton, mm-hmm. he's famous, but and I knew that Jim Broadbent, who I don't consider famous, but he's like a famous character actor at least, he'd asked them to be in the movie.
I like it. That's cool.
So they, yeah, wrote the part for him.
Yeah.
Of the police chief.
Right. And even at the very beginning, the people who told Nicholas Angel that they were shipping you out of here, those three guys, I mean, Martin Freeman was the sergeant. Well,
yeah.
You know, and I know this isn't, you know, who's going to be the bad guy, but just to have them do this, Martin Freeman, and then Bill Nye was the chief inspector. Mm-hmm. And I forgot the name of the guy who was in between, but they're all British actors that I've seen in lots of things.
Yeah, but I feel like some of that is that it's that guy, because Bill Nye was in the first one. Mm-hmm. He was the stepfather. Yeah. Martin Freeman was in the first one also, I believe. Wasn't he? Before he, and that was on the cusp of him becoming really well known. So I kind of felt like some of those kind of people were coming back because they'd already done the first one and they liked working with Edgar Wright. And so why not?
Okay. Well, there's people like, you know,
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that was my feeling.
Well, like Edward Woodward, you can look him up, right? Right? You know, huge, huge guy. And then you've got Timothy Dalton, like you said, Jim Broadbent as the inspector,
mm-hmm.
hugely popular guy. I'm looking at some of the other ones. The Andes, that's kind of a different thing. I love Olivia Colman. But she's not in, I don't think she was ever a suspect. It's like the whole town was really suspects.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Stephen Merchant. I'm just flying through these names, but they're all, you know, actors that were in a lot of movies from, you know, action movies. They're recognized. Steve Coogan is the other guy.
Okay.
Yeah. And Peter Jackson was even in it.
Oh, was he?
He was. He was just really briefly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, I thought that was neat. And it was mentioned in the commentary about, mm-hmm. you know, how you could always tell, you know, who the bad guy was by who they were, you know, because you know that they're not going to hire this person just to do that.
Yeah, they were littering it with – well, mm-hmm. and also one of the clichés that they played on is the fact that often in these movies, you know, the bad guy will hint broadly at what's going to happen, something bad, and then it happens, but no one can prove it. And that happens all the time, and a lot of times the victims are the ones who are saying, well, if this happens, and then it mm-hmm. happens to them.
Right, right.
And so they were doing that with great abandon.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, it's a movie that's really fun to see at least twice because you can catch a lot of these foreshadowings or whatever. It's like all of the murder victims sort of, I mean, they I don't know. It's almost like they state their fate before mm-hmm. it happens, you know?
Right.
And I think that's pretty cool. That was mm-hmm. fun. That was fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we haven't talked much about Danny Butterman yet. How's that for a name? Butterman.
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff.
Yeah, so one of the key things when Simon Pegg, Nicholas Angel, gets to the village is that he's not welcomed really with open arms by everybody at the police station, but the person who hero worships him, I guess you could say, is Nick Frost's character. And he has seen everybody's action cop movie ever and has lines memorized. And he dogs Nick Angel's path. You know, have you ever thrown yourself across a room shooting guns both, you know, with both barrels? Have you ever done this? Have you ever done that? And he's going, yes, no, no, of course not. Yes, yes. So, and so what happens is, everything that he's said actually happens, every cliche he's asked about actually happens, and he gets to do a lot of them by the end of the movie, mm-hmm. which is one of the best movie endings ever, I'd have to say. But but it also kind of shows that, I don't know, this is the buddy part of it. This is the heart of the movie. Can Nick Angel unbend enough to be nice, really nice to this guy? Can he care to understand him? Can Danny Butterman see Nick Angel for who he is too? And will Nick open up enough for that?
Yeah.
Because he follows him along without question until a certain point. And then, of course, that's the crisis, moment of death sort of situation in the movie. And they have to trust each other. And that's what forms the bond that takes them through the rest of the movie. Because Nick's got to open up.
Right, right. And that's a fantastic aspect of it. I was intrigued by this movie because of Nicholas Angel. You know, there's a lot of bad stuff going on around him and things, but it's like, you know, he needs redemption too. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that they were able to pull this off, or I just enjoyed his arc, I guess I could say, because mm-hmm. he starts off so serious and all that. And then, you know, things kind of happen to him that are not so good, you know, like he loses his girlfriend and things. And then, but he's really genuinely alone through his own fault, because he's put himself there, right? He's put himself in this bubble. And then Butterman is the guy who kind of thaws the ice. Right. Mm-hmm. And then the situation in the village, where he rises to the occasion, but he rises to it not by himself.
Right. Because Nick has never really had any experience of the world. Nick, I say, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking of Danny Butterman, Nick Frost character, the hero worshiper, has never really had any experience of the real world without it being buffered by his father, who's the police chief. Mm-hmm. And his mother died when he was young. And so it's just been the two of them, and he's only been in this little village. And so the only outside world he really knows is movies. So when Nick Angel Simon Pegg comes along, he's thrilled, and he also has to learn the real world. That's what both these things do for each other.
Right.
You know, he has to become tougher. And that thing you were saying about hard experiences and getting hurt and all that kind of thing. I was just reading something the other day that was talking about, it was like tips for aging or something like this. But there was one tip in there where I was like, I think this is a tip for anybody and for living, is that you have to have had several tough crises in your life to get through, or you don't ever really fully mature. Because it's those things that bring out the best in you and help you learn. And they're talking about things even like, you know, when you go through the death of your parents, or when you go through things like that, not necessarily a huge other crisis. Mm-hmm. But they're like, if you're always buffered and protected from the world, you cannot mature. You can't move along. Which made me think of helicopter parents and a lot of the problems we have with millennials today.
I've got a lot of things just flying through my head right there. Yeah. It's like a social commentary.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to be offended by any words or anything like that. And you're just like, oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's not reality. It's okay. It's okay to say, you know, hey, you don't need to purposely be offending everybody. You know, I think that that's okay, mm-hmm. but it's just gone so far beyond that. It's like, I am going to be mortally offended by the tiniest thing, and I'm going to boycott whatever you're involved in. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's mm-hmm. just, it's tough.
Well, everyone's forgotten what true tolerance means, and we all bump up against each other because that's just how it is when we're all unique, and we are.
Yeah.
And people have forgotten how to forgive.
Yes, right. Yeah.
And it's those big experiences, I think, that open you up to understanding what other people suffer, for one thing. So when you're protecting your kids from everything, or you're trying to buffer yourself from everything, you can't relate to other people. You've never lived another experience, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, it makes me think of, you know, World War II and and all that stuff were, I mean, talk about big experience.
Oh, yeah.
Just, you know, an entire generation of people going through that, you know. Just amazing.
Or the depression or the, you know, so many things that, and just, and regular life. Regular life has plenty of things if you get out there and live it. And I don't mean you have to climb mountains, but I mean, people get hurt. People die. You have to make yourself vulnerable in order to, you know, fall in love. Or, you know, we all have these big moments in our lives and we all make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And none of us are perfect. And living in that bubble is not going to protect our loved ones or us. I mean, and that's kind of the point of the buddy movie, I guess, is they rub against each other. They have to allow themselves to be, to forgive, to be forgiven. And then they know each other better so that they can love each other more and move on.
Yeah. And it's, you know, when you look at Nicholas Angel, he's out there experiencing stuff, but somehow it's just not sinking in. It's like, it's, just pinging off him, right? Because he isn't opened.
Yeah.
And that's what Butterman does to him, I think. Yeah. Again, with the rubbing up against him, you know,
he's like a dog.
He's breaking that open, you know?
He's like just a sweet wagging dog. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's because I was thinking about this and I was thinking about Nick Angel and I was thinking, have I or you been in a position where, you know, competence has earned annoyance? And then I thought, I actually have, but it wasn't necessarily my competence so much as a particular person resenting my personal style.
Hmm.
And that made me think of Nick Angel. And the problem is that his personal style doesn't let anyone in because he's never thinking of anyone else. And what you learn is that he was betrayed. He felt betrayed by somebody he loved. And so he decided to become a police officer. He was going to be the best. But what he effectively did in order to do that is shut everyone out.
Hmm. Right. You know? Right. Yeah. That's exactly what he did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is an interesting thing to me. It's like, well, I've heard Simon Pegg say, you know, well, one of the themes of the movie, all three of the Cornetto movies, is an individual against a collective. And I thought about that in regards to this movie and, you know, respectfully, I just don't see that as the big thing. To me, it's because he doesn't do it alone. This is not Nicholas Angel against the collective.
Right.
It's Nicholas Angel finding a community with which to fight the collective. You know, without Danny Butterman, I mean, Danny Butterman is the key to Nicholas's success.
Yeah, because, and when you say that, he finds, because at the, toward the end, what happens is because he and Danny Butterman find that within themselves, it makes who he is more acceptable to the other policemen. They then trust and believe him.
Right.
So then they are the community that works together for the greater good.
Yeah, the greater good. Exactly. Yeah. And you think about Shaun of the Dead, isn't it kind of the same?
Yeah.
So it's like they do share a theme, but it's not quite stated that way. So in Shaun of the Dead, I mean, he's got the whole group.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the whole group is what keeps them going on.
And it forces him in that case, because he's a slacker, to become more competent, to step up and become closer to the Nick Angel character at the beginning, just in the sense that he now has to perform.
Right, right.
He's not allowed to slide anymore and slack off because he's got all these people depending on him and working with him. So it's almost like, how does the individual find themselves? It's through their community that they become more of who they're supposed to be.
Hmm. Yeah,
and
interesting.
And I would say The World's End is the same way.
Yeah, and in 12 years, we'll talk about that one too. But I think that's too.
It's not. I didn't like that one as much as.
Oh, didn't you? Oh, I really did like it. I liked it. But yeah, someday we'll talk about it. But
yeah, I liked it. I just not as much. Yeah.
Yeah, he was again, another different character. It's almost like we're, you know, taking this suicidal alcoholic and making a comedy around him, you know, which is a tough thing to watch. Right. But it's, but it's also very interesting. So I like, you know, in these movies, even in Shaun of the Dead, there's this drama and comedy both that are, you know, at odds or working together, dramatic moments and comedy moments. Anyway, at World's End, I think that is maybe the most dramatic of the three.
Oh, yeah.
There's some heavy stuff in that.
Yeah.
So, but I did like it. I did like it.
I liked it okay.
I'm penciling that in for 2022.
Okay. That sounds good.
All right.
So, do you have a favorite buddy movie?
Movie. Wow. You know, Lethal Weapon had a profound effect on me. All those. All those did. Okay. Those were, I'd have to look up what years those came out, but that had to be in the 80s, right? Mm-hmm. Late 80s. That was right when I was getting out of high school and stuff.
Formative years.
The formative years, yeah. But I remember watching, what was his name? Martin Briggs, right? I think that was his character. So Mel even then, I remember it.
Lover.
Exactly. Yeah. But I liked those movies a lot. And then in three, they added Joe Pesci.
Yay.
For comic relief. Comic relief. They always screw you at the drive-thru. You know, here's what I remember about Lethal Weapon. Yep. But I like those movies. So just off the top of my head, not having thought about that question, I would say Lethal Weapon. How about you?
You know, I realize I asked the question and I didn't really have a good answer. I mean, I really liked, and I haven't seen it for a long time, but what was that Eddie Murphy, Nick Nolte movie?
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Crud. Yeah.
I've got my computer right here in front of me.
Thank goodness.
Eddie Murphy. Slightly famous guy. Let's see.
Not so much lately.
Not so much lately. Oh, luckily, Beverly Hills Cop 4 has been announced.
All right. He'll be back in the limelight in no time.
Oh, perfect. Trading Place, 48 hours. 48 hours. Yep.
And I tried rewatching it recently.
Reggie Hammond.
And it did not hold up as well as I remembered it, but I really loved that movie because the differences were so extreme. And I was thinking, though, but I was like, you know, my other favorite sorts of movies that are those thriller action movies tend to be like Die Hard. Well, that's not really a buddy movie.
I love Die Hard, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the lone wolf sort of a movie.
Yeah.
Maybe
that could be my Christmas pick.
I would go for that. I would go for it. And then the other one that occurred to me is not exactly a buddy movie, but it does what we're talking about in this movie, and we've talked about this one too, is The Magnificent Seven.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's not emphasizing the buddy element as much, but it does talk about all the benefits of, if you want to call it, community, and how being around the other people ennobles, if that's a word, ennobles, embiggens the smallest soul, as they'd say on The Simpsons. But
that's funny.
That one, yeah. So I don't really have a specific one, but it did make me want to watch Bad Boys because, you know, this shit just got real.
Yeah, oh, that's funny. That's like, okay, Act 3 is about to start. That's
one
like
the
perfect parts. Line for that.
Oh, my gosh. And I have to say, when I was watching this, I was like, oh, this is everything that everyone loves about these movies. When Nick Angel says, that's it, I'm not going to London, I'm turning around, I'm gearing up, and I'm going back. And the vibe that he had, it was every Clint Eastwood movie where he's gone up against the town.
Yeah.
It was that lone drifter. Mm-hmm. And then when Nick Angel's just sitting there going, oh, this is amazing. Or not Nick Angel, I'm sorry, Nick Frost.
Nick Frost, yeah.
It's too many Nicks.
Butterman.
Butterman, Danny Butterman. And then he joins in, of course.
Yeah.
And that in itself is a huge matter of friendship and trust because we've never seen him do anything competent.
Hmm.
other than open a door to trip somebody who's riding a bicycle shooting at people.
That's right. And it lifts Nick Frost. It yes. lifts a Butterman up.
Yes.
You know, right. That's what good sports players do too, right? They lift up mm-hmm. the people around them. That's what makes them great somehow, right? Well, and it's kind of the same type of an effect. It's community.
Well, I was going to say, and isn't that we were talking before we started about you're going to be in a new play, and you were saying mm-hmm. you'd rehearsed or you'd learned your lines, but you hadn't gotten to the point now where you got the familiarity with how your cast members were going to deliver everything. And it's that, I would think it's that same thing. It's that back and forth where you're really hitting it right. You're all having fun and delivering something unusual to the audience because it's elevated.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's elevated. And that comes with trust too. Once you trust the other person and then, yeah.
And teamwork, it can, is the only thing that can really come from.
Right. Right. Exactly. But yeah, that's, you know, and I love that aspect of this movie. The individual of Nicholas in relation to the community. Yeah, so what about the bad guys in this movie? We've got the neighborhood or, I don't know, what would you call it? The people in the village, I would guess you'd say the community leaders, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so the Timothy Dalton plays the guy who runs the grocery store, but he seems to have the keys to every part of the city. He's always showing up wherever.
Right.
It's like he's the mayor. He seems to be the leader of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then all these other people that have come together to sort of collectively impart their will on the whole town. I guess you could say they've decided what's good and they've decided what the greater good is. And they are implementing that. Right. With whatever they need.
And isn't it so British? The thing that they're imposing on everyone is a sweet little cozy village.
That is
with
funny.
Nice flowers and things.
That's right.
You know, so they can win the competition, the local regional
competition. If we don't take care of this right now, soon we'll be covered in jugglers or however you put it. There will be jugglers everywhere. Yeah. Yeah. That is funny.
Yeah. And it made me think about what are the things we look down on and the standards that we hold so high we're in danger of sacrificing other people for them.
Hmm.
We've all got those things and we can all lose that sense of perspective, especially when there's other members of a community, because it's one community against another, really.
Yeah,
They're all supporting each other. And because they all hold that same ideal, you feel like it just escalated past the point of, you know, making the drunks get off the street to the point of, well, we'll just kill them.
Yeah, it's like, well, we can do that, you know, then we can do this.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, and we're seeing that. And it's in the sake of goodness. It's for an initially good cause. And so that thing that you brought up earlier about, you know, there's no tolerance of anybody saying something that you might not agree with or might hurt somebody's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And that started off as political correctness, which I embraced at the time thinking, oh, this is a good idea. And now I look at it and go, but when does it stop?
Yeah, when does it stop now? Yeah.
Yeah, when is real tolerance going to be allowed? When is it just being, you know, what thought speech that's been or thought police that's being enforced on everybody or
right
whatever you'd call it.
Yeah So it's like a combination of change is really hard. People don't want things to change. They want, you know, they have their ideal and they want things to stay the same, you know, in this movie.
And then
you combine that with, you know, what it becomes intolerance, you know, genuine intolerance in this case. Where, you know, because, yeah, people throw around those words like intolerance and hate and evil. It's like, I don't think it means what you think it means.
You keep using those
words. Yeah, you keep using those words. But, you know, well, let's see what real intolerance is. What's real evil, you know? Mm-hmm. These things are real. They're very real. And we're losing the meaning of these words.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what this community does. It's like they started with something that was genuine and probably good. You know, they had a vision of their town and they wanted to kind of maintain it. And, you know, as they're all business owners and they're like, well, if we have a light, nice, cozy little village, you know, people are going to want to come here and it'll be a, you know, a tourist destination and everything. And then it just, with their success, it went overboard. It's like power went to the head, you know, and they said, well, now we can impose other things that we don't like. And well, just kind of spirals out of control. And I think that that is a fairly real way that things sometimes happen.
Oh, yeah. You know? Well, and often I think we don't understand, we're not introspective enough about why we've even begun something. Because in this, the reason that it really spirals out of control is because Mrs. Butterman, the police chief's wife and Danny's mother, mm-hmm. killed herself because they didn't win the best village that year or whatever.
Yeah, right.
And so he takes that as his goal, as her monument. He's going to always win the best village, says the police chief. But no one stopped to say, wait a minute, why was this so much more important than anything else? She killed herself. Maybe that shouldn't be our goal.
Right, right.
You know, so obviously this movie isn't digging that deep, but I just, as you were talking, I just suddenly thought, but this was sparked from something that was unbalanced.
True, true. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Certainly was. Yeah, and unbalanced is a good way to put that too. That's something that I am constantly getting unbalanced.
Yeah.
Balance is hard. But yeah, perspective, balance, purpose. These are things that we should be looking at in ourselves more often. At least sometimes, right? You can get mired in that, but I think that a person needs to look at that sometimes.
Yeah, and for that, that's where an honest community is helpful, because friends and family, if you start really bouncing out of control, hopefully they love you enough to, you know, hopefully kindly.
Well, that's great. Because I was talking to someone the other day, and we were talking about, you know, one of the values of religion. You know, people mm-hmm. keep saying, you know, well, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. You know? But what that means really is like, okay, I have a belief in a supernatural and a some kind of need to connect to it, but I don't really want to do it in a community.
Yeah. Right?
But the problem with that, and I remember I had a really good friend whose name was Nick. Whose name is Nick.
This is the Nick Show.
Right. He was an Episcopal priest. I assume that he still is. I haven't talked to him for a long time. He moved mm-hmm. to Washington. Oh. But we were talking one day, and he said that, you know, often a person who spends a lot of time by his or herself thinking deep thoughts can go down a road that makes no sense whatsoever. And he or she will not realize that until they start to talk about it. Mm-hmm. So now you've started to talk about it in a community. And just the stating of a idea is often enough for you to realize, oh, that's bollocks or whatever. That is, you know, yeah. He was British too, but it was like, that makes no sense whatsoever. And as I'm stating it out loud to you, that somehow is the final filter. I have put the idea out in community, and now under scrutiny, it makes little sense.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't realize that until you do that, and do that in community. And that's one of the values of community.
Sure, because a lot of times you don't realize it even when you're saying it.
Right.
Because you're just saying something that you've already thought, or let me just say me.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is people either ask questions or say, I don't understand, or they push back and present a different point of view, and which is the value of conversation instead of just shutting people down because I don't think what you're saying is very nice. And when they push back, if you don't just retreat and harden your position, which is the bad way to handle it, if it makes, even if you're confused and go, whoa, I have to think about this some more, I never thought about that, you at least then are forced to broaden your view. Even if what you do is come back and go, no, wait, actually this point of view was correct, but I needed to adjust something else about it, or I hadn't thought about the things you said. Here's how broadening it, you know, addresses that. And that's the conversation that begins. And that's also the value when you're saying religion. Again, one more time, we come back to self-examination and confession.
Yeah.
Because there's something about, and this is when, to me, there's really something about saying things out loud that it makes it more real.
Yeah,
I mean, we are physical creatures. We are animal and spiritual. And saying it out loud is real different than thinking, oh, I'm sorry, God. You know, you have to, and just saying it baldly with no excuses.
That's true. And I can agree with that from experience. I can say that I have felt that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
And it has stopped me from, I think I've said this before.
Right.
It's like there have been a couple times where I've been thinking, well, and I'm like, no, I don't want to confess that.
Right,
to
right.
I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we are multifaceted creatures, mm-hmm. us humans, right? And so not only does the ideas, you know, in community help our thinking, you know, but also like in Hot Fuzz, you know, when Nicholas joins the community, he becomes better. They both become better. If you call him and Butterman a community, they both mm-hmm. elevate each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then somehow the other side, their community brought them all down somehow. Right.
Yeah.
It's like they became powerful and then that power corrupted them.
Well, and there's also the value of friendship.
Yeah.
But as well as community, which we see in here, and that's the point of a buddy movie. But yeah, I just think of that other community, which is, you know, killing people for the sake of a village plaque. And it makes me think of the internet. You know, it's the things that it brings together. If you're not careful, it can bring people together who just encourage each other's worst faults.
Very true. Very true.
I mean, and then, so you continually have
it to. It can also do the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm not saying the internet itself is bad. I'm just saying it facilitates bringing people together who aren't really thinking very deeply sometimes. I think of the guy who, this was, I guess, a couple of years ago or whatever, he flew his airplane into the IRS building in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
And when people went and looked at his website, the comments boxes were just full of people encouraging his loathing and hatred of the government and the IRS.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, they just had found a forum and they were just all yelling at each other the same thing and encouraging each other. No one was in there going, well, wait, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, not to go down a whole other road, but.
Yeah.
That is so disheartening to me. And I know, I mean, just disinformation. You know, like when I get an email forward or something from somebody I really care about that is just full of false information. I mean, that is just verifiably false. If you just look at one thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
you just sent me a pile of numbers that I can go look up and they're not true. You know, one of the things I remember shortly after 9/11, you know, which was horrible.
Oh, yeah.
There was an email forward floating around about something in the Quran that talked about eagles and how, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I looked it up and it wasn't true.
That's crazy.
All you have to do is just look it up in, you know, the Quran. And I was like, you know, gosh, I mean, this is all so complicated enough without this, without, you know, a segment of the population believing false information. And, oh man, today it's worse than ever. It's worse than ever.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. So there you go. Good and bad in the internet.
Yeah.
Go down a horrible road. We could talk about that for hours, but it's just like, oh, I just wish if everybody just had the right information, then I could feel okay about selections. You know what I mean? But when I feel like there's a significant portion of the population that is working on bad information, That just kills me. It just kills me.
But isn't that the history of humanity?
It is. And I'm not saying it's any different. It's just that it's faster now, right?
Yeah.
But right. I'm just like, it's just disheartening. Yeah. Verifiably false stuff. And I don't claim to have all the information. In fact, that's one of the things that I feel that freezes me is because, you know, you go on a talk radio or something and you listen to these people, you know, and they're talking as if they know everything. And then I'm just like, well, how do they know? You know, is that true what he just said? I don't know if it is or not. And that freezes me sometimes where I'm like, I really don't know if it's true.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, well, how do I find out if it's true? And then you start to look into all the news and then these guys are like that. These guys are like that. So what do I have to do? Watch both to try to figure out what the truth is. I think it's a huge problem. And I think that the internet has just made it faster.
Well, but I think we have in our own hands the answer to that part of that problem because each person is responsible for how they apply whatever information they get. And so our faith has to inform us. We have to know our faith. And if we hear something that seems to be against what our faith believes, we have the duty to go look into it, get more information. Our friends and family are people we should be able to bounce things off of to go, I heard this. What do you think? To be able to kind of gauge against somebody else and then our community. So all the things we're talking about in this movie are the answer to the bad information question because that's people have always had the problem. It's just, is it the gossips around the well who are vilifying someone who might be stoned later? Who's going to speak up?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first, somebody has to ask a question about it and risk being on the wrong side or having people not like them.
True.
You know, so you have to be dedicated to the truth. And if you're dedicated to the truth, then you can sort it out. And maybe we'll never actually know because there's so much information now. How do you sort it out? We have to come back to what's important. How does it bounce off of those things?
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a real answer, but
yeah, it's well put. But still, you know, you're like, okay, well, where do I find facts? Where do I find news that's factual and not opinion? You know, those are some questions that I have. You know, and sometimes there isn't a fact to be found. Sometimes it is opinion, right? Sometimes that's what it is, you know. But sometimes it's like, well, there's a number. And I want to know what that number is. I mean, is that a real number? And you're like, well, I can find, you know, it's like the scientific studies everybody's always doing, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's, you know, that's another thing. It's less insidious, but still causes people to change behavior. You know, how do you find out the truth behind something like that? You know, it's sometimes you can't. But I know that everything causes cancer and also helps. Almost everything. So,
yes. Mm-hmm. Well, and part of that is how are we informing ourselves? Because a lot of times if you look at history, like I have all these friends who are like, I'm not going to eat gluten because that's the latest thing everybody says is great for you. Whether or not I'm allergic to anything, I'm not going to do this or I will do this based on this other thing that they say is good for you in food wise or whatever. And I'm like, I think about history and I'm like, does anybody who's doing this still remember Battle Creek? Back when I think his name was Sidney Graham and all these various people, Post and all them, they had their sanitariums, which were supposed to make you healthy, and breakfast cereal was the way it was going to happen. I mean, that's why those things were invented. Grape nuts and Rice Krispies and all these various things. You know, I'm not, again, talk about facts. You can look up these things, but, and I probably have a few cereals wrong, but and Kellogg, he was a guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so it's food fads have been with us for a long time. So I kind of look at that and just go, every time one of these fads come up, I just sit back and go, I'll just wait for a while before I jump on this bandwagon.
And that's really how to look at all of it, isn't it? All the things coming in from science. It's like, yeah, just hang tight. We'll see if this is really true or not.
Yeah.
You know, even, you know, when the latest scientific discovery, we've discovered fusion. Well, let's hang tight and see. It turned out not to be so.
Yeah. Well, and I think we have to remember where we keep our faith. It doesn't mean that we're not trying to do the smart things for ourselves and our family, but we have to remember to not always be driven by fear.
That's very true. That's an excellent point. And what we're talking about, you know, here in this movie is we've got this community here that has gone wrong, right? Yeah. But where's their bedrock? You know, this is what you're talking about. Where's their guiding star? Where's their moral compass, right?
Right.
And so what you're saying there, as far as, you know, us personally, we have a direction that is is given to us by religion, really. It's something that we focus on and we try to keep, right? So we have that bedrock of knowledge, right?
Right.
But in the greater scheme of things, there's still really difficult decisions to make as far as, you know, voting, you know, for a president, let's say, based on events in the world or based on factual information on this or that, you know, whatever, you know, I know that it's so complex that you've got to figure out what's most important and everything. It's almost like you need to prioritize in your head what might be important, but I want to make that decision based on information that is true, not opinions of somebody.
Well,
sometimes, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, not every issue is a fact. A lot of issues are opinion. But I'm just saying that when there is a fact, I would like the fact and not an opinion.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah.
And a lot of times, though, in our lives, we're not going to get all the facts we want. We have to go based on what we can. And it comes down to the reverend versus Nick Angel.
Yeah.
And when the reverend's saying, oh, all this violence, this is terrible, forgetting that it was not forgetting, but basically trying to make everybody ignore that it was all started by the bad people. Every action that Nick Angel had taken at that point was defensive.
Uh-huh.
And Nick Angel goes, I know right and I know wrong, and I have the good grace to know which is which. I mean, it kind of comes down to that a lot of the time. It's you just have to make a judgment call. And so it's what is your judgment based on? Sometimes numbers, but sometimes you just have to base it overall.
True. That's absolutely
true. The big picture.
Yeah. Yep. We've got a tough thing ahead of us here. As the Reverend pulls out a pair of guns from his cassock.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom. Well, that brought us to an interesting spot. Go ahead.
I did not expect that, people.
But it really is. It's a community gone wrong, right? A community that's lost its compass or lost the direction.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I'm sorry. What were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, did you notice that no one was actually killed by a gun?
You know, you mentioned that, and I didn't notice it until you said that, and I was like, oh, they really
did. So British.
That is really cool.
Yeah, I noticed this time when he's, you know, shooting the chain of the flowers that's over someone's head. And
yeah, that's hilarious. So many bullets at the end, and nobody.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody gets hit. That is another one of those cliches, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, you have the villain who comes out, and they can never... Well, one of the things is, well, you get one villain at a time to deal with, right? They never seem to come at you in a pack.
Right.
And also, they can't shoot. They can't seem to aim very well.
They can't aim, right.
Yeah. That's funny stuff. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I really do want to get that Roger Ebert book and flip through that at least and see what's in there.
I know, I wrote it down.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's going to be fun. For it.
Well, cool.
So,
well, good. Well, I think we've reached the end here. That was a quick hour.
Yeah, this
I think
shows
we hit pretty much every topic under the sun.
We can dig deep into even the lightest seeming movie, people.
Oh yeah, and Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright, just well done. I just enjoy them so much. I'll watch anything either one is involved with.
Mm-hmm.
It says here that Edgar Wright's next movie is in post production. It's called Baby Driver, and he wrote it. After being coerced into working for a crime boss, a young getaway driver finds himself taking part in a heist doomed to fail. Lily James, John Bernthal, and Kevin Spacey.
Well, that sounds more serious than his usual movies.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see.
Should be interesting.
Let's see what Simon Pegg's. I know he's got
Star Trek
coming up. Yeah, this guy, man, Star Trek, Star Wars. He's in all the things. Yeah. Mission Impossible. He must be the greatest guy because people just seem to love working with him.
Could you imagine how much he's loving? I mean, I guess you don't have to imagine. He probably said, what fun for a nerd.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. He said, I just saw him at a Comic Con. It's not like, you know, which makes us personal friends, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Totally. I could probably call him up if I wanted.
Oh, I feel like it.
But he said that playing Scotty when they first said, okay, ready, go, you know, and he just giggled and they had to do it over. So yeah, he is having a good time. You know, yeah. And I heard, let me see if this is true. He wrote the next movie.
What?
Star Trek Beyond is written by Simon Pegg.
Wow.
Yeah.
Flabbergasted.
Right. So it says he's got, let's see, there's another fellow, Doug, J-U-N-G, Doug Young, and Simon Pegg are the writing credits.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd heard that he had written it, so.
It's like the dream. He's living the dream, man.
And then after Star Trek, he's filming a movie called Terminal. Looking in that. Two hitmen go on what seems to be a suicide mission while working for a mysterious employer, Annie, who may surprise the hitman with her level of involvement in the mission. That's kind of a sentence fragment there, but
yeah,
it's what it says. And the director is someone named Von Stein, who looks like he's a second unit director in several things, but this is his first director.
Oh, interesting.
And then after that, Ready Player One.
Oh.
Director Steven Spielberg.
Oh. Well, I tried reading the book and went, so I think a movie will probably work better for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe an audiobook would work better. I don't know.
Cool.
But, yeah. Have you read that?
No, I haven't.
It was all the rage on Goodreads.
It was everywhere for a while. Yeah. 2018. So it's a while.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that'd be interesting.
Fun. So he's a busy guy.
Yeah, well, that's great. Where's Simon Pegg for us?
Right, right.
Huzzah!
Huzzah, right. And Star Trek is coming right up, isn't it?
Yeah.
July 22.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Let me go block out my calendar. I did not realize this was happening.
Right.
That soon.
Yeah. Idris Elba's in it, too. I just love that guy. I can't get enough of him.
Everybody loves that guy.
Yeah, and he's going to play Roland in The Dark Tower. It's filming right now.
Which is Stephen King.
Yeah, it's right, a Stephen
but
King.
I never. Have you read those?
I've read the first couple.
Okay. Yeah. I've never read any of them, so I don't know.
And then Matthew McConaughey is the Man in Black.
Oh, well, that's the hero. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Well, I look forward to that much more than the movie I just saw, Free State of Jones.
Oh, okay.
By the time this comes out, it will have been out. But
okay.
Avoid at all costs.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, what's Carl Urban up to anyway? Carl Urban is Star Trek Beyond and then Pete's Dragon.
Oh.
Interesting.
They're remaking that?
I saw an ad for it. I watched Finding Dory.
Oh,
and there was an ad. It looks completely different than the old Pete's Dragon.
No, Helen.
It looks like a Mowgli kind of a story.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Interesting. So I don't know what to expect.
I don't know, but I'd be curious.
It's going to be out this summer.
Carl Urban, he just will do anything. I like that.
Yeah, and then he is going to be in Thor. Thor Ragnarok in 2017, and he will play Scourge.
Of course,
Scourge.
It doesn't sound good.
He probably called him and said, "Can I play Scourge?"
I was already Dread or whatever. So,
and Idris Elba is also in it.
Gosh, that's the perfect confluence.
And Tom Hiddleston, of course.
Well, come on,
Chris Hemsworth, Jeff Goldblum, all right, Mark Ruffalo. Kate Blanchett. Wow. These movies. Anthony Hopkins. These are all in that movie.
They're all coming together. Yeah. It's the perfect storm. Ragnarok. I'll be here all week, folks.
Oh, I love it. That is too good. Speaking of perfect storms, what's next for us? Let's see here.
Lord have mercy.
Lord have mercy. The greater good.
The greater good.
Purgatorio by Dante.
Yeah.
Yep. So we're going to do part two of the Divine Comedy is our next episode. So, yep. Here we go. Yeah, it just got real.
This shit just got real.
I love it.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
I like it. Well, cool. All right. Well, thanks a million. Fun as always.
Thank you for picking it. That was great.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Yeah, especially to this one where we just spiraled, talking about spiraling out of control.
Yeah. Hopefully who knows? Who knows? You bet.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see everybody soon.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.